interrupting the current neo-eucronial, climate-changed, behaviorally controlled, I'll repeat that, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting Episode BTWRLM 522. We are in the middle of it, folks. On and on, the perception management is really coming to the fore, and I want to make sure that we keep ahead of all that. Not just that it's there and we dismiss it, that we have to see how they're going about doing it, what that might mean, and how to translate that into what we see. I tend to believe we can look at across the ocean and see what happens in other places and realizing that they're likely the same people, the government that does it over there will do it to you, and how we can best position ourselves. The answer to this is going to be a parallel track to what's going on. And that takes a lot of work. And I don't know if I hear many people understanding that or able to, notwithstanding the demands upon us. And so, again, the information is known to be one of the main things. If a general or whomever can get you to capitulate psychologically, they've really won the battle there. And so one thing that happened this last week was essentially what appeared to be Monday Media Massacre, where we heard two well-known broadcasters got axed. And to do my part behind the woodshed to address one of the hosts, which seemed to be one of the voices that was a sort of challenge to the ongoing corruption and getting louder and louder. And apparently he crossed the red line was Tucker Carlson. Notwithstanding the politics of it all, I felt that even just the getting a voice out there for the purpose of a voice and more information was more important than the silencing. And so I did my part, I hope, or tried to invite Tucker Carlson to the RLM network, where I tweeted to him, "Hey, Tucker Carlson, if you don't mind doing a little radio in the interim, I'm sure I can arrange a broadcast at RLM Radio, reallibertymedia.com, at barman, lower line RLM. Whenever you make the switch, get you behind the woodshed." So I think we've done our part to bring a voice back. Actually, I understand he's doing quite well, even on Twitter, which I'm really seriously questioning this forum at all, that it becomes something and people are flocking to it, and a lot of supposed critical thinkers are flocking to it. Tucker Carlson was axed. It looks like it's a political hit. He follow up with what Fox News needed. I think Murdoch didn't like him going after Trump, I think. And what it looked like to me is all these, we're getting not just Monday Media Massacre. It looks like a lot of the hosts are being changed out at this point. It looks like they're setting up the new teams for the 2024 election and anticipating what voices they need to go out there. So in this information and perception management world we live in now, and what turns out to be, I can't see much around it, the cognitive warfare that's going on. We're watching a setup here for the new fraud to come. For those of you that understand the elections or believe in them. But anyway, Tucker Carlson, despite my invitation, has yet to respond. And so we'll wait and we'll see what happens here. More on the cognitive war front. It's on and on, folks. But leaders, they say, in alleged Pentagon leakers unit suspended. U.S. Air Force Inspector General's office is investigating Jack Teixeira's place of service. And so this is that Massachusetts Reservist Center. The United States Air Force has suspended two leaders of the unit where alleged, listen very carefully with all the hesitation, Pentagon leaker Jack Teixeira served. According to U.S. media reports, the Department of Defense is investigating the extent of Teixeira's alleged unauthorized disclosure of classified intelligence assets. I found that little statement fascinating, and I don't know how to pronounce his name, so if I don't know if it's Portuguese derivation, I don't know if it's Spanish, I don't know if it's like Texas. So I didn't really stop to think about it more, but just let you know, I am interested to know, but it's not that important with everything else that's in my face. In my trying to destroy me at this point, I've got other things I really have to worry about. That his name's kind of irrelevant to the point of what? The cognitive warfare. Listen to the hesitations. Investigating the extent of alleged unauthorized disclosure kind of fits the bill where they said, well, some of that information was no good and some of it was. Some of it we didn't know about and some of it we did. And so we're still continuing the story, or the hesitation explains to us, well, what can we say? The unauthorized disclosure of classified intelligence assets was alleged, and we don't know what part of that was. It's an ongoing perception management thing. And so they found a whole lot more things coming through there. Why they're going after the leaders, I don't understand. They're, again, the scapegoats start coming out, and then they're only suspended, understand. And I don't know whether or not they're had an intentional here. That means they had an intentional so-called leak. And to the extent more information came out that the leaders may have been, or should have checked or not, I don't know. But this sure continues that cognitive warfare question and what really is going on with all that. As I go back to another story for Ukraine issues a warning on air defense. Well, when you look at that and you look at the story, they're complaining about not having enough, and you say the information that came from an alleged unauthorized Pentagon leak, so-called, was that true or not? Is their air defenses true? Or they come out with the news right after that that the Ukraine issues warning on its air defense. Now, why as an army, as an any military, would you say you got a weakness? Notwithstanding that Russia probably knows all about it. However, this is another call and another inducement, I guess, to the Russians that says we don't have what we need. Well, that might be true, or maybe not. It came out right after that story, that other story about was an alleged and unauthorized. And the question that they said some of it was good, some of it was bad. I still consider these things ongoing perception management, cognitive warfare tools. And the United States government is always sitting there, seemingly, to cause the question and hide behind, well, they hide their perception management psyop behind what we can chomp on and feel is legitimate. And we carry that, we keep carrying, keep focusing on this. And yet they've moved on, and the seed has been planted in most of us. And we continue to either, again, we can buy into it or we can completely dismiss it. What they're looking for is to find out how, as they keep getting that big data input, how your behavior is being altered or not, and in what direction. It's that SMART thing. They keep monitoring until they figure out how to defeat you. And so a lot of the communications that we have in social media help that database. Again, AI could find patterns to narrow down the field of what they need to keep putting out. I just find it interesting. They keep this unauthorized, when they said some of that was okay and some of it wasn't. It sure sounds to me like it was maybe hiding the fact that it was not unauthorized. And they go through the machinations against the leaders. Moving on, we got some more. What they do with this military stuff under subject matters that are pretty cool, fascinating, interesting. I'm sure a lot of us have had UFO sightings in our lives, whether it was a flying object that we couldn't identify and it was simple as that, or we actually think that was something even bigger and badder. Or maybe itty-bitty teeny-weeny. Who knows? We have an interesting interaction that went on to show us the whole UFO thing may be a big psyop. The question, how do you do counterintelligence work with UFOs? Was a question asked of an authority supposed on this. A UAP probe chief's request puzzles experts. Testifying before the United States Senate Armed Services Subcommittee on Emerging Threats and Capabilities, All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office, AARO, Director Sean Kilpatrick said that his task force had, quote, no credible evidence thus far of extraterrestrial activity, off-world technology, or objects that defy the known laws of physics. Let's just take a minute's word right now. But I'm going to hear the screaming. Wait a minute. But let's take its word, because it's not about all that. We're getting back to the cognitive warfare. During the conversation with Sputnik, Robert Scavario said that the ARO and its predecessor program were both primarily focused on the collection of UAP-related evidence and on, quote, analyzing large data sets. Quote made here, but the director of ARO, Dr. Sean Kilpatrick, mentioned that they would need additional authority to complete their work. And one of the things that he mentioned was counterintelligence work, the journalist remarked. What does that mean when you talk about UFOs? How do you conduct counterintelligence work with UFOs? Part of the answer? He noted the UFO narrative was previously used by the U.S. spy agencies, such as the CIA Psychological Warfare Operations, PB Success. Quote, the CIA's Jamwave station in Miami sent out cable directing staff in Venezuela to create tabloid stories to dominate the news cycle. One of the things they suggest was flying saucers. He also mentioned the U.S. government agencies had previously infiltrated the ufologists community, claiming that the U.S. Air Force Office of Special Investigations, quote, used agents and informants during the 60s and 70s to investigate supposed ties between ufologists and Soviet agents. Going further to say, so it could be any number of things, and my question here is, what does that mean for this specific office? Because unfortunately, without any kind of direction, American intelligence agencies, the Pentagon, other such bodies have a long history of abusing counterintelligence authority, Scala added. And so here we have an insight into discussion showing that the UFO situation, and it's probably not unknown to a lot of people that study it, is actually part of a PSYOP by various agencies of the government. And back to the point of cognitive warfare, and we had recently the UFOs and the China balloon nonsense and all that stuff. It just keeps plugging away at people and getting them involved and getting them focused on those things that we're passionate, possibly passionate about. And I don't want to say I'm not too passionate about a lot of this stuff, but I've found out that all that stuff, some of it, a lot of it you can't prove. It is a private experience, and there's not a lot of way to prove a lot of it, and no one's taking the next steps to try and figure out how to make the proof. And so they, in this void, they play on our subjective opinions of what we'd like to see. Again, we incorporate the false memory. Remember last week, we talked about just having a little bit of a subjectiveness attached. We can do that in seconds that affects our memory. And we want to see the things, apparently we want to see the things we want to see. And it makes a little bit of sense. We'd keep our world safe. I mean, I have been told that if we were to know the truth of everything, we'd literally go insane almost instantly. So I guess there's this protection, this grace that's given to us, so we don't get to see all that. Okay, that poses some other problems. However, so here we have a PSYOP, again, the UFO, ufologist. I'm not going to put a cold blanket on all of it, but this is what the government does with it. We have to be aware of it. And what came through, and it becomes important here, as people start to respond, they start seeing these anomalies, whether they directly see them, whether they even comment on them. People are realizing now there's this really big problem. It's really obvious. Getting back to Tucker Carlson and what might be going on there, why is the military leadership even commenting on the Tucker Carlson situation? Serious question. And I took the opportunity to respond. A serious answer, I say. You are in a total dominance, undeclared war for the territory of your mind and behavior, now moving at warp speed, cognitive warfare. Why was the Pentagon interested to make a comment on Tucker Carlson? This whole entire media thing is a PSYOP, and they have their agenda in moving forward. They actually believed Tucker Carlson not being on was better for the country. And this, they show the picture of Milley, who should be, I don't even know why that guy's in that position, but that's not up for me, I guess, as we watch the subversion of our entire government, it seems. I say our, advisedly, but nevertheless in power and controlling. Well, as much as you would allow it. And they attend to that with their social medias and news and the media. And again, I want to recall everyone's attention to the modernization of the Smith-Mundt Act that was able to turn deception and propaganda onto the people of the United States. That, to me, was a declaration of war. But we have the right of free speech. We have the right of unadulterated information, and they're making it adulterated. No one seems to think that that's a big enough problem in the system to stop it either. And we have a ton of problems as we start to see supposed representatives talking about the next new thing that they see that's no good, how they're going to cut it out, how they're going to try and stop it, or they just make the claim it's going to stop. I'm not so sure. Nothing seems to stop, actually. And so, PSYOPs, again, going on, and we have more moving into another subject matter area. And I've told you the military was involved in this before anybody was saying it was. Back in when I said Operation Hindsight 2020, and I find it interesting, that little tag is moving into the future. Operation Hindsight 2020 will work for anybody who sees the Kobe swindle, who sees that it's a scam, but works from the effects, not where I'm talking. What I'm saying still works. The Operation Hindsight is good for those people that we see now bringing all the ad data for how harmful it was to actually do the fundamental truth, which is the harms are just a consequence of the failure of the local jurisdictions to do their duties, obligations and duties to protect you by implementing the law, the due process underneath the communicable disease law. No one's touching that. But Operation Hindsight 2020 is, I'm still able to say, in that tag that I started around 2019 or right at this January 2020, are you going to look back in hindsight and see where the error was and correct it today? That tag still works today with even the 30% that are left. And they're eating away at those relative to, let's say, that 30% that's skeptical. They're still going to, the propaganda manager works on those even so in different areas. Even though there's lots of people coming to see the problem, again, if you're focused on the consequence and not the cause, in the future, you'll make the same mistake. There's just no way for you to see it. You just want to resist what you see, but you have no power. And if they, and when the military figures out how to get around that, like they can do in other places like Australia and stuff where people don't understand their power either and aren't in a nation that gives them certain rights or that actually just gives it to them and can take it away kind of thing, then you have a problem with people not wanting to respond at all, and they don't know where to go. It's more obscured. But we have a behavioral control here, as I've been talking about. This is all about getting your behavior, and your lack of response is a behavior they want. These people, the lack of response to an invasion is what an enemy army would want. And so those of us, as I call them crickets, those of us knowing about this stuff and not really quite figuring out where we need to throw in, that hesitation is enough for these folks to keep going and hurt us. And so, again, it's all about behavioral management to get the victims of the war, the assault, to capitulate. CDC Behavior Change Project targeted vaccine critics, was funded by Pfizer and New York Misinformation Response Unit. So don't underestimate that Pfizer was involved, and that New York, the state which implemented the first murders of the old folks, is involved. And they are in charge, again, of the misinformation discussion. The benevolently named Public Good Project. Again, all these things, these names are just to get your mind to be focused on what it is, like these PATIROT Act. You think it was for patriotism? No, you find out they made everybody in the United States of America and everybody outside of the United States of America presumed to be an enemy combatant is not a Patriot Act. And so this is what they do. They find these ways to make names and lulls you into acceptance. But the benevolently named Public Good Projects describes itself as a public health nonprofit focused on, quote, large-scale media monitoring programs, social and behavior change interventions. A new report is now shedding more light on how the system of censorship, deplatforming of COVID vaccine skeptics, worked on the height of the pandemic, including the intricate ties between a number of actors such as the PGP and their partners. One of them is the Center for Disease Control and Prevention nonprofit called the CDC Foundation. The CDC itself was established by Congress. Other partners include FDA, Kaiser Permanente, Rockefeller, and Humana. As per the Tennessee Department of Health, which cites these as part of the bio of the PGP CEO, says Dr. Joe Smizer. I want to remind you, David Tulis had his court case where over 3 years, it was supposed to be a 14-day case. The judiciary totally obliterated equity jurisprudence to deny that he had any harms at all and take him out. It literally decided that his paperwork was blank, essentially. Denied that he had any standing, denied that he had any harms, despite the fact that he had fundamental rights being involved. And that was the only case I know in the country that actually put before the court that the officials had failed to do their duty, and there is no authority to issue any kind of orders, and that the judiciary itself had issued its own orders in violation of any power and authority to do so on a presumptive emergency, which is a possibility. And that case took 3 years to be dismissed. And through the machinations of that case, you should actually go find it in David Tulis in Tennessee. And now I see this, that as per the Tennessee Department of Health and Humana, they're involved with this behavioral control. I see more why the paperwork that was filed, the claim was that the Bar Association, with its House Delegates resolution, promoted to promote sustainable development. And this Kobe swindle was a part of that. That they would be biased before we got going. It was already in the originating claim, which predicted if this court was corrupt, which is really no doubt, but even so, that they would make it difficult. So I see now another evidence, another witness, why Tennessee, though it was a though it's supposedly Republican, the judiciary of which is absolutely and abjectly corrupt. It's not a question. They actually embrace sustainable development in their rules in the Supreme Court. And all, with all that known, this is what the paperwork was all about exposing. And so, interesting how you just keep your eyes open. In this case, the Tennessee Department of Health was involved in a case that I was helping mentor through to get to the point of where there was a duty in the government to protect you, and it failed, and there was no judiciary to protect you. And this is the terrible truth that is another cancer in this country. When I say that you need to just make records, it's because right now there's not the massive population does not realize at every turn they've been subverted. This is not unknown to me, and I won't go too much further than to remind you, we sued the Bar Association in 2013, JMD. We also sued the politicians of both parties, the main parties. So none of these people, and they all defaulted on the claim that they, in fact, make war on the laws of the United States. It makes perfect sense that the Tennessee judiciary would do that. They're part of that bar that embraces the foreign sustainable development that I see again. Tennessee Department of Health mentioned right here, what we're talking about, it's about behavioral control. Getting people to agree. Capitulate. The enemy attacking wants you to capitulate. I suppose if you don't, then they want to kill you. Comply or die. I wrote that phrase a long time ago in documents when I was writing. So, just understand, if you keep your eyes open and pay attention, these news notices tell us that there's a vast corruption. It's so vast, I don't even know if people can actually comprehend. And I can't even tell you, I don't even know if I'm talking about a piece of ice on an iceberg relative to what's all there. And quite overwhelming at some point, but then I had to come to terms. Not one of us can solve any all of it. So we really do have to come together and work this out. And it has nothing to do with politics. It has nothing to do with the party affiliation. It has nothing to do with your beliefs, culture, cancel culture. You're everybody's being defeated by these folks that have, I don't know how they feel themselves different. They take on the mantle of superiority and they now come with their club to beat down everything that's not them. And yet it's all based in fraud. And to add another ingredient to this dish that will appear new unsavory to many, the New York City's Health Department misinformation response was also among those the PGP has in its portfolio of collaborators. How many times I talked about collaboration and what that is? That's strictly how. It's the word that explains to you you're sitting in this condition of thesis, antithesis, in the solution. The position. It's not anything to do with law. It has to do with private-public partnerships that get what they want because they're in the position of decision and no one comes to stop them and expose it, and repeatedly so now. Now it's gotten to a point that you have to. So what we see here in this behavior change project that Pfizer was only a demonstrator of a thing, not the actual producer, by the contracts of the DOD, with these folks and the universities that did the production, which I still can't understand how they could do all those units, millions and billions. This doesn't make any sense. However, they're claiming this stuff. But why I said earlier, or years, 2 years ago, I think it was, what we were looking at is an experiment where some populations got these things, these experimental things, and some didn't. They might have got the saline, and we saw that in the evidence where different areas of the country or even within cities had marked changes in their consequences, their health consequences. Some had no effects, and some had quite high death rates. That was all prior to a lot of the people coming on, but they want to beat you down, get your behavior changed. This is about what cognitive warfare is about. And so what we heard last week when I was bringing up the White House executive order relative to promoting biotech, this is a sustainable biotech where they get your behavior and they get the populations to capitulate. This is protecting the bio industry. You understand the harm they do, but they get you to capitulate. They've got your consent. They got your buy-in, what they call with these collaborators, get your buy-in. And they work hard to figure out how to do that. It's nothing more than what cognitive warfare is about. And we're seeing it right here, a report relative to the fact that that's what they're about. The CDC is about behavior change. For the future they want. They're not giving you health. Health One is not about health. And so I've talked about all of these things on and on. In fact, I don't know how much more I can repeat myself, and if no one's interested, then why am I wasting too much time? But to go in depth of it is even outside, because everyone has to read the words themselves. I can tell you, you'll nod if you agree with me, you'll shake your head in the negative if you don't, but until you see the words and then contemplate what that might mean in application for you and maybe your perspective, you don't really have an understanding. And then, as I say, the behavior of not responding to this oppression is equal as if you were capitulating to the fact and just taking up this information. And we know we can identify all of this behavior controls based in fraud. All of it. Why that hasn't stopped anything, I can only say there became a mindset after 2008, 2009, which set up the toxic fraudulent monetization, right? The toxic debt was fraud being monetized, being made money. That was what broke everything down, and we saw the fraud of the 9/11 happen. We saw how it worked its way through. We saw the destruction of rights. What they're after is your economy. They destroyed a lot of that in people. They set it up for the failure again. You're watching that again. But we were working in fraud, and when that dam was broke about restricting fraud as being a crime, what the Tennessee judiciary, what they destroyed, the equity jurisprudence, they destroyed, and not looking at the case and saying that someone who was harmed by this, by equity principles, did not exist because their protected interest did not exist. Destroyed that equity jurisprudence, destroyed our ability to get justice, they call it. And this is where everyone goes, well, then what do you do? Well, this is where you start having to take on your own. You start making the records to protect yourself, as I've been saying. You just don't enter in. You don't let them do this thing, this behavioral change, and you identify how they're trying to get you to do it. And I say the only protection you have is go to the objective basis, and as long as they haven't changed it, and they're going to tell, I told you, they're going to be doing that. It's been on the hook. They did it inside the rules already in Tennessee, but now they're going to try and go after the legislatures, and I could watch the legislatures start to capitulate. As I said, when it goes into legislation, then it almost relieves any judiciary to even have to worry about it. They don't have to destroy jurisprudence. David Tulis's case was the first and only case in the nation. And if you know what you're looking at, and it doesn't take that much, and you see how they had to mistreat that case and spend 3 years to do it, you should realize the problem. And so the only protection I know we have is go parallel, stay outside of it, and be able to keep this system away from you. Because everybody who listens to these, it's not just the CDC, it's all of these collaborators in your country. All these folks that do smart stuff, not too intelligent for the people. These are what's coming after you. And they have it's an incessant and there's no time that they're not coming after us in this regard. They get to down to where there's not enough people responding or resisting, and then they just know how to go after that. So the other part of this propaganda management or COVID warfare as well and perception management is that U.S. settles COVID vaccine injury claims. Now, people may read these stories and they see what's going on, but I and just kind of see them as a story. I see them as a continuum of notice to us that there's a cognitive warfare going on to diminish anybody who tries to say no. If they try to do it on their own subjective opinion, will be defeated, because just 3 of the 8,000 plus who filed compensation have received anything. 3 years into the COVID-19 vaccination rollout in the U.S., just 3 of more than 8,000 people who have sued the federal government over injuries they believe the vaccine caused have won any payout, according to the recently published data of the United States, U.S. Health Resources, I shouldn't say United States, it's the U.S. Health Resources and Services Administration, HRSA, citing Reuters. I don't want to get into the rest of the harms. The point is that if you 8,000 people, there's only 3 that actually got harmed. You see the system that will not protect you around what is a objectively demonstrably a fraud. And what I find fascinating about this is that U.S. court, probably no attorney, came forward to say this was a fraud that their client was induced into taking, that it wasn't a vax. As soon as you walk in and you say this was a COVID-19 vaccine, you've lost. And so understand how fast this is working. I look at this as more perception management. It's futile to go and make a COVID-19 claim, certainly as a COVID vaccine, I'm sure. But the corruption, I told you, jurisprudence has really been destroyed. This U.S. court for this is a setup for the takedown. It's essentially made so it can't, it doesn't want to show any harm because it has to do what? It has to promote that biotech sector. It has to promote the behavior that they want you to follow here. And so this is news here. This is about the vaccine injury claims. It wasn't to me a notice of the, how little it's the fact of futility and setting up telling you the system is not going to protect you. My point there again, over and over, is then you cannot rely on the system. You must lose trust and confidence, and you must be vocal and objectively so on how that is. One of the ways was to insist for you, and some of you did, insist for you, not on a medical exemption or a religious exemption, insist for you, the local official never declared you as the principal of contagion carrying a demonstrated non-fraudulent infectious agent. And for you, you dispute this. And hopefully your sons and daughters, because they don't have a say. So this is an ongoing perception management going on and on and on to defeat people, cause their behavior to feel defeated and just go with the flow, so to speak. U.S. shortest life expectancy and highest health care costs? Why? And I told you this was the Modernization Act. I said when the Modernization Act for health and housing and food securities, remember all the securities, you would see in the future a complete destruction of those things. Now we're seeing the first question, shortest life expectancy and highest health care costs in the United States? Why? Well, Obamacare was a follow-on to that Modernization Act for health care, wasn't it? And you saw what happened there. This was the monopolization of administrative health care, which is not health care at all. Health One is not about health care. It's about promotion of commerce and extracting the most, plundering the most from you in your worst moment. And if you look at the way the state, even the state governments are set up, and I've been sad to say, and I mean, people get sick, I'm sure, but anymore I'm hearing more and more people having to go use the medical profession. And boy, it's horrendous what I hear coming out as what they call practicing. You know, doctoring you up is not fixing you necessarily, to doctor up something. And so I'm noticing it's a lot of money. It's very expensive. It's like there's a two-tier system also if you pay cash or not, if you don't have insurance. But they'll charge you half. So that's saying they're plundering the insurance side, which I'm not saying anything new. I'm just saying that's for sure. And when you can't pay, then they're going to come for your cash. And or they're going to come after your property. They're going to want you to name up all your property so they can come after that. That's what senior services and child services, all these services do for the state as well. That's shifted in the last 20 years to do that. It's been set up to do all that. And so we have here an article that goes through and shows and answers. Here's one way to look at the corruptness of the rules of the American government. And so here's a way. And I say you need to validate this, that it's correct. Put this in your mind and allow it to be part of how you look into the future as we watch these things. They're not going away. The perception management continues to change your behavior toward the future they want. Needs requires then that you have to be up on more and more stuff, more and more things, just to protect yourself. Now, if there's anything message I've been trying to give to people, regardless of not hardly anybody that shows up, literally the listener who is there, I thank you very much, and I hope you're applying this. The people don't want to hear that they have to do their own work. And I don't know a way around it, and no one's telling me how that would work. Oh, I hear we're going to rally up our guns and go take them out, and why aren't you doing that? And I hear this all, I'm a fence sitter. That when I see that, I know someone may be very well read in things, but they've never had to apply a thing. They've never actually had any experience. They've never had to come up against the system, and they haven't realized that them and a few people with pea shooters relative to what can come down on them, it's not going to work. And so the only thing I know right now, and it's come to me to say, is that each one of us has to be fortified with knowledge that's objective, not our opinion. And the only other thing to do there is to place a duty where it belongs in an official. And you don't point to your own defense. You look for the intercessor of the black and white, and you don't claim it. The law requires it. And that way you're not ever going to be someone who is recalcitrant or deemed to be not in the law or be a criminal or an outlier or whatever. You're not any of that because you point to that black and white that was what? Always and always has been upon the officials. Well, that law is really upon the officials relative to their public trust duties. And the other things, if you will, crimes are the objective basis for the government to use to measure when they're going to attribute to someone the culpability or liabilities. And so these are just again, guidelines that we say that those are the objective races. When you exceed this level, this is when you become liable or culpable. Until a duty is fulfilled, the legislature enacts for an official, they don't have authority. And so, again, this is underpinning what's going on. Getting back to this, where you have a declining healthcare system, people dying, being more sick, life expectancies going down. Who would have thunk it in America? Who would have thunk it? And yet it's all been set up as a plan to do so and extract as much from you in your old age and your aging time, or the time now they've accelerated when you're going to get sick now with this COVID swindle for those that participated. Doesn't mean if you didn't get it, you're not going to get sick, but it's been accelerated in a way, the unknown way as well, that it's by plans, all I can suggest to you. And that shows us, and you may not can rely, if you're going to go to an opinion that's been plundered, a condition that's been to do plunder, can you trust what it's going to tell you? So many people I've heard go in for a simple little thing, and next thing I hear that they're going to have major surgeries. Then we also find out that doctor wants to go to Geneva or someplace on some conference. It's nonsense. There's not health care. Health One is not health care. CDC Health One is not. That's global. It has nothing to do with that. It's brokering pharma. These are silent. And then now we see the biotech being promoted. Not you, not your health, not to your health. It'll come under the collar, the stalking horse, that it's doing you a favor, but it's only to promote the system, to promote the industry, promote the commerce of it. And we hear this story now moving into food security. Well, let's listen. What happened underneath that? What happened under the transfer of genome information across border globally in 1992 in the biodiversity treaty? The thing they did for COVID swindle in Wuhan. Do you hear anybody talking about this stuff, folks? I haven't. No, they say that it's a lab thing. Okay, well, you can keep believing all that. And if that's what you want to focus on, you stop focusing on the fact that that was a swindle, that was a fraud, and there's someone behind it wants to hurt you. And they're going to do it again in some other way. Here's what it might be coming on to. Food security? Grow and eat your own vaccine, says this article. But this is written back in 2021 in the middle of all this nonsense that came through as they were also getting the warp speed going. The future of vaccines may look more like eating a salad than getting a shot in the arm. UCC Riverside scientists are studying whether they can turn edible plants like lettuce into mRNA vaccine factories. In a way, not that it's 2021, this is not even a new technology. I was reporting on this type of stuff a long time ago, but now they're moving it in while they overwhelm people that this may be in your food. I guess you have to eat a whole head of lettuce if you're going to get anything with this. But we also know that mRNA technology is a gene-modifying technology. And they will deny it, but we know that the M is messaging a organ function in the cell that causes a hybrid DNA to be developed from its instruction. And it's this hybrid DNA that they're attempting to get to replicate and go through the process. It's fascinating stuff, but it's not a vaccine. And so they think they can do these mRNA vaccines, but the vaccine has a definition that is in a particular and attached to a particular subject matter, and that's communicable disease. And that communicable disease, the cause, by law, has to be identified. The non-fraudulent infectious agent you're going to use this treatment for has to be identified and has to be known to stop it. So this story, anticipating you're going to be eating mRNA vaccines, is a way to seed your mind in the future. You're going to see this because they're going to promote this. But that this is plausible. I want to move this right back into, as I said, the food security is not. It's just to promote international commerce and international industries that create more commerce and biotechnological horror, essentially, relative to what they do. This in our food would be an unethical food, in that, simply put, that they didn't identify that you were carrying the contagion that they non-fraudulently identified. It might be possible for you to go down to the store and get this lettuce if you, by the local health official and the doctor, and that never goes away. Remember, the doctor has the exclusive jurisdiction over your care, and you have a say about that, that you insist, like I've been saying, they cannot impose this unethical food if you haven't been found to be someone with a contagion that this head of lettuce would stop, prevent, and control the spread of what you are found to have. And unless people start getting in their mind the fact that you can point to all the harm of the previous so-called vaccines by saying vaccine or even saying, no, it wasn't a vaccine, which they'll just denounce you as a heretic anyway, you will not have the right answer in the future. This unethical food is unethical because it never, as a vaccine, because it never was never prescribed and generally disseminated upon everybody, and it could only be by law lawfully disseminated upon someone, an official and a doctor identified with the principle of contagion for a non-fraudulently demonstrated infectious agent. And I just said something, you should go back on the file and you should copy that down and put it on a notepad and stick it on your refrigerator for the next time, and then adapt that to any other subject matter that come fraudulently after you. And when you find out, you have the power to insist. And the only way you know that is if you go read the communicable disease law, like I've asked a lot of you to do. Some of you have, and you saw it. They cannot say now that that you are a heretic, that you are a denier, that you are someone that they can behaviorally control, because they don't have the authority now. And yet you see it coming. Plants as mRNA factories for edible vaccines. Again, another story with some more information. They're dumping a lot of money behind it. This time, the National Science Foundation, $500,000. What does Science Foundation to do about this, actually? And the project's goals for this to advance, and again, this was done in 2021 when they were rolling out that warp speed and people were starting to have the effects. They were going to bring it forward to break it all part of the mind so that we think about it like it's viable. The $500,000 grant to this project here from back then are threefold, showing the goals of it are threefold, showing the DNA containing the mRNA vaccines can be successfully delivered into the part of the plant where it will replicate, demonstrating the plant can produce enough mRNA to rival a traditional shot, and finally determining the right dosage. Well, again, they can't call it vaccines if you don't have a demonstrated infectious agent in a principle of contagion, a man or a woman or a little one. And so they're working a little bit ahead of it, and we know these are mRNA, these are software of life things, and they're dedicated gene therapies. In other words, they are literally to use them even beyond a vaccine. It takes a doctor, someone who knows supposedly knows what they're doing, says that you have a defect that this thing can fix, or we think substantially so. Then you do that risk-benefit thing. But it's one-on-one, not like what they did at warp speed. How I was able to jump on this told you it was coming and seeing how they would do it, because I was hoping to the contrary, everyone would stand up on their rights they speak so highly of, and we would stop this dead in its tracks. Well, in a way, I guess I have to sit back and say, well, if it hadn't gone that way, we wouldn't have known the Pentagon was involved, would we? And that what you did get was not vaccines at all. And it was an attack. The Pentagon is in a global attack mode, and you are its victim. We want to see with this, I wanted to point out something here, going to Kanukistan, the plants as factories of edible vaccines. We also see, I wanted to point out the dynamic that could happen in the future. Hundreds of thousands of Canadians flocked to food banks as inflation soars. Canadians have flocked to food banks as the country is facing a food crisis triggered by skyrocketing inflation and the rising cost of living. The CEO of Kanukistan's largest food bank has warned, we are absolutely in a food crisis in this country, and certainly in the city of Toronto. Stop there. Remember, I talked of food security. This is a global thing. The modernized laws for food security. You're watching the failure. And I told you about 10 years we'd be start figuring it out. Well, it took a little bit longer. But let me show you something. If they get people into a place where they have to go to food banks, and I'm not sure if anybody of you have ever engaged that, you are handed a box of food. Remember, in the United States, SNAP was adjusted to do public-private partnershiping for suppliers to give the food. And the quality of the food, the items in the boxes changed. And they tended, apparently, that I can tell, they tended to be more of the processed foods. So you get a lot of people here. One of the ways this will work, it seems, like hundreds of thousands of people. They ramp it up, and it's going to be millions pretty quickly. And they go ahead and have a system, the government does, and feeds this food in, and it feeds it from manufacturers of food that use this unethical mRNA technology. And if you're hungry, you're going to eat. If they don't make a big deal and you're noticing they don't want to put the label on these things so much, That's why it takes laws to get them. You have to make that happen in your state. These things are noticed to us. Then you are going to be those that are going to eat this food because you have to eat. They don't allow, there's nothing else out there. However, you can't get it. Remember I told you, at some point, you could have a ton of money, but if you bring a wheelbarrow in and can't buy a loaf of bread, who cares? Well, you go around the food bank and you can get that loaf of bread with that GMO, whatever the heck it's got in it, with this mRNA technology, and you're going to eat that bread, whether you needed to or not. And you'll still survive, unless and until you're one of those that get affected by the gene therapy. But this is how easy it is to get people, the underserved class, see, being served up into a problem. And I'm really concerned about how this works. And I see this condition going on and been going on for a long time. That, again, I don't know how, we do have a lot of work to kind of keep, to make a parallel system is going to be, I don't know, very difficult. Another question came up. No, farmers aren't required to vaccinate livestock with mRNA vaccine was the title. If I know this is another perception management title, they're not required doesn't mean that they don't. I don't know how much more I want to go with this. You can read these statements. The claim, the farmers and ranchers are required to inject livestock with mRNA vaccines. The AP's assessment, false. There's no mandate in the U.S. that livestock receive certain vaccines, and there is no COVID-19 mRNA vaccines licensed for animals, as some online suggest. Well, it doesn't mean that they aren't being used, and it doesn't mean that they couldn't be done without a mandate. When you tell a farmer, you need to do this, otherwise you're not going to have a crop. Or if you don't do this, we're not going to buy it as a co-op, or whatever. There's all kinds of under the scene things that might go on in contracts. Are you eating the moving on from the plants and the things? And farmers and ranchers here, we talked about the farmers, we go to ranchers. Are you eating pork injected with Merck's mRNA livestock vaccine? A question. And from Dr. Mercola, he opens up with an interesting observation that, in fact, the very first RNA-based livestock vaccine, swine influenza, M3N2 RNA shot licensed in 2012, was developed by Harris Vaccines. The company followed up with an avian influenza mRNA shot in 2015. Harris Vaccines was acquired by Merck Animal Health later that year. Mercola's point was here, he's against pork because of its high linoleic acid content. And that's I went through a quick little study on that because it's not that interesting to me. What's that about? You have to really look at this real carefully. He makes a bit of a point, but you got to put everything in context. But he does point out that there's also, he's against pork for that reason, and now for this, that this company makes these vaccines. CureVac developed an mRNA-based rabies shot for pigs in 2016. The swine vaccine platform, remember last week we were talking about platforms being developed. I mentioned it, but not went to the tab. It's the 60-day biocide program that they set up. Platforms to execute upon people, the delivery systems, weapons delivery systems, essentially. The swine vaccine platform Sequivity, introduced in 2018, was developed by Merck in partnership with Moderna. So again, these folks are together. You can read this story. The point is that this is what's been developed. The question then, are they required? No, they're not required, but they're available. So since the 2018, you see the big players in it, having them available, though they may not be required. Then I went over to see the other side, someone who does what they call Organic Beef Matters, a gentleman named Glenn, and his response to the mRNA vaccine. And he goes through a nice discussion, alderspring.com, he goes through a discussion about what he found. I thought it was fair enough, and he makes this comment. When researching the subject, I found it very clear that no company is yet offering mRNA animal vaccines on the open market. First of all, no one drug company has laid claim to be the first to produce it or methodologies in place that would allow for mass production. Second, I found many articles, some very recent, stating that the grant process is still ongoing. In other words, animal pharmaceutical production companies are not just getting money to explore the new technology for all classes of livestock. What I find interesting is what Mercola was talking about with the patents and what a gentleman earnestly looking who supplies beef in an organic manner and doesn't use any of this stuff. And we'll tell you all about that. And it's nice to know, I suppose. I didn't find information that would say to him that they were even available. And so we have this perception going on, like, well, they're not in your meat. We don't know that. We can't possibly know that. And again, how would we know unless you're going to have a law that says you have to make it known? And then moving forward and on, interesting, the state looks at it. Texas Department of Agriculture looked at the thing because it was a question posed. And this is where some of you would come into play when you're a farmer, a rancher, or any interest, consumer, and you want to know about this. Apparently they have enough information, and this shows you they will respond, or at least initially give you the report. And I say that it's up to you to keep following and tracking back on this, making sure that they do the finding. They go, since news of the development of mRNA vaccines and mRNA-related treatments for livestock came to the attention of the Texas Department of Agriculture, we have been working towards developing a fact and science-based assessment of the risks associated with this technology. Let me interject before I keep reading. That pretty much admits it's out there, and they didn't deny it. And so what, I don't understand, the gentleman, Glenn, who looked on the internet, couldn't find anything obvious. And yet, underneath the skin, not noticed to us, again, this, to me, this is all perception, cognitive warfare. It's sitting there in the background. Well, what else is sitting in the background? Maybe the use of it. And the Texas Department of Agriculture goes on to say, our analysis will include, again, this is what your follow-up has to be when you're interested. You follow up on this. What did you ask them? What happened? If they haven't produced it somewhere, I didn't go farther to say. I'm just pointing out. There's notice that these things are in the pipeline if they aren't authorized, but they're also available, whether or not, or could be available, and we wouldn't know at some point. And they go on to say here, this department, Texas Department of Agriculture, our analysis will include the clinical research, the structure of existing Texas law, the public policy, economic and production impact of the different policy prescriptions we may adopt. I aim to ensure that Texas agriculture remains safe, trusted, healthy, and wholly uninfected by dangerous and unproven technology. I personally take this issue very seriously. No political hot takes, just as a well-reasoned and well-researched proposal based on wide range of input from stakeholders, scientists, agriculturalists, and other experts. We are looking at this issue at TDA and will share your concerns. Please stay tuned. Now, what is that? They're not looking at you. They're looking at those experts. What kind of work did we get in scientists? What kind of effort did we get from the work of the scientists on COVID swindle? The stakeholders like FISA, what are they doing? They're investing in CDC to do behavior control. So while Texas may be up in front and telling you we're looking, who are they going to rely on for their information are the very same people that move these chemical weapons attacks through our society and through our food system. Okay, so we got all these things going on, and we move on now, the new scare this time, moving into summer and fall down below, I suppose, in the south. What is Arcturus? COVID-19 variant detected in 22 countries so far. They're now beating the drum, again, the perception management, to show you that this thing is still around. The COVID subvariant, and one of hundreds to spawn from Omicron, the moronic variant of a SARS-CoV-2 virus, doesn't seem to be more lethal than any others, but the health officials are watching as it slowly spreads around the world. More infectious virus variants tend to displace less infectious competitors and become the dominant cause. What they say in the beginning was that they fraudulently stated that SARS-CoV-2 is a virus when in fact it's a patented, essentially protein string. CDC did that. They fought hard to make sure that it was theirs. But what else more can we say about that? It's novel. It's not natural. And then they claim that this thing has many hundreds of variants. Well, isn't that just the coronavirus? SARS-CoV-2 aside, coronavirus has these variants. The seasonal flu, influenza, has variants, almost all of which there is no actual vaccine for. And so they're not considered a communicable disease. That's why we can be still sick and there's nothing that the government can do. You see another limitation. I just wanted to point out that this new subvariant is called Arcturus, and it should be making the rounds soon if you haven't already heard about it, in the stream of ongoing threat that they are attempting to make vaccines, if so called, for using mRNA gene therapy, which is really more, to my mind, I don't even know. I know there's some things that you can use it for relative to gene defects. I've seen some of that, but as a general application, it's not. It's not at all applicable. It's unethical in the way they're thinking to apply it. And what they're talking about when they go to SARS-CoV-2 and that it spreads, it tells me that they're still doing, if you will, it's still spreading by the interaction of the chemical weapon attack at warp speed. It's still going out in the body. The people's bodies are handling it if it doesn't cause another illness, and its subvariants are no more powerful. So we're not getting that escalation either by the interference with the people, our bodies. Thankfully, I say. So moving more and further, relative to what are we talking about in this Kobe swindle, was nothing more than the Great Reset stuff. It was, we haven't heard Klaus Schwab mentioned in the news cycle very much. The WEF, not so much. It's there, comes around, but these are the proponents of this kind of a thing, which was really driven by the Pentagon. And the support by the Bar Association I mentioned was their own House delegates' resolutions since 1991, I think it was, that they supported sustainable development, that one of the tools of which is this climate change and the purported carbon pollution, which they've conflating what we used to think of the pollution problem in the 70s and 80s is now your existence, the existential threat, instead of being maintained as looking at the world and saying, well, there's a natural process of things and we need to pay attention to that before we start making, having any thoughts. But we certainly shouldn't, before we demonstrate the non-fraudulent cause of a problem, we shouldn't really be acting on it. Sustainable development, all that stuff, you know, Kobe swindle or climate change, global warming, all that, all the other things we hear, is all working after a problem, looking for a cause, actually, because it's a fraud. They're all frauds. It's not to say that there's not a pollution or could not be a pollution problem. And the United States has done, I think, a decent job in working toward cleaning all that up. But we don't have to go to extremes. Again, risk management and the balance of things, I haven't brought this up, the National Environmental Policy Act is a supplemental act to other acts. It says in there that there's a balance to be matched with nature, but mankind is to be the beneficiary, not nature. And you've watched the stakeholder condition. You've watched the attorneys, the Bar Association as well, their members. You've watched the agenda people, the sustainable crowd, promote nature as personifying nature and putting it on a pedestal instead of placing it in context. Essentially for United States law would be about that they call the balance. The balance was not supposed to favor the nature. And that's not to say that mankind doesn't have an obligation to keep his pen clean. So don't reject what I'm saying because, I'm not talking about being pollution. It's not about that at all. That's the other problem. If you're thinking that way with my words, then maybe you're mind controlled, your perception has been managed, or your behavior is being controlled. Maybe take a step back and relook at this objectively to what goes on. But there's some people that are pushing the agenda. They're the change agents. And we see this in this next story moving on. In this news that I've been collecting up over kind of a week, and it's there to tell us a bunch of things. New York City will track carbon footprint of residents' food purchases. Look very carefully that they say New York City and residents. I said the residents really are those Washington, D.C. aliens that are invaded, and y'all are residents, and that's what the problem of your local election certificate is, your registration, is that you have to be a U.S. resident. You're not even voting for the organic state. You're likely the best that you're going to get close to in the state is to be subject to, you become in that regard essentially a employee of the government, and you become property of the United States government by the monies that are taken by that or the benefits taken. That was just an offside statement because I just got a friend of mine, my mentor, I guess I can say, got my start to look at all this stuff myself, came to me with a document he's been working on for quite a long time. And we had discussions over the time, and he's done the study to show that's exactly the fact. You take benefits or grants from the United States government, you are considered its property, and you will be subject to its laws. And so this brings on a whole new thing, not new, we've known about it, he put it together in his habeas corpus to show local officials are actually federal employees and subject to federal law, and we move that along that way. The point is, this is the kind of thing that this gets displaced. We're looking at New York residents. What I want you to pay attention to is New York, as I found in local laws for codes, if you look very carefully, you have to find like the one line that says this, but the jurisdiction of a local of the county or a municipality is only over its property. And so I want to point out here the title, New York City, says it's residents. That's its property. And it, New York is actually taking federal money. It's an employee of an agent of the federal government as well. And so that's your lineage when you see this title. Nevertheless, they're promoting a foreign agenda called this climate change thing, and underpinning which is the carbon footprint. Mayor Eric Adams admitted New Yorkers were probably not ready for this conversation. And so they're going to push it anyway. It's not their place, but the residents are, they're called New Yorkers, are residents. Well, if you're not a resident and you understand about that, he's not talking to you and not about you, and that starts your first jurisdictional challenge if you start to build that. And this could be anywhere. Don't expect anybody to agree with you. Just understand that's what you have to study for. New York City will track the carbon footprint of residents' food consumption as part of a sweeping initiative to decrease the city's carbon emissions. So you see the lineage right here. If you just put this together, the residents are property of the government. Their output is the city, the municipality's output. You're not independent. You're not free, free people. You're integrated. You're included. Inclusive, remember? So here we have the, like, it's right here on this point to talk about what's going on. The food consumption is part of a sweeping initiative to decrease the city's carbon emissions. But they're going to get all the parts of it, the aggregate parts of it, to eat less. That's austerity coming up. About a fifth of the New York greenhouse gas emissions come from household food consumption. I don't know if I want to do too much more analysis. I've done it before. Greenhouse gas emissions are a fraud. They're not actually, they're there. They could be considered in the greenhouse, but they're not part of a system that's been proved to be exist relative to this thing called global warming. In fact, there's so much, I'll get to some of this stuff. Remember, climate change has in its definition the only man, not even in the earth. There is no other part to this equation, and therefore they don't agree there's a sun that can contribute a thing to it. Part by of the definition that they use. Household consumption is what they're after. He wants to come after. Of course you're not going to be ready for this conversation. He wants to starve you out. The mayor's office of food policy has ordered the city of agencies to reduce their food consumption by 33% by 2030. You see, he's ordering city agencies, but he's talking residents as well. And so you see, you can just read the story and see what the law really works on is not all the people. They just believe it works on them. And this is what I was trying to get at. It's the Cosby swindle. You think it works on you. It doesn't until there's an official order, and that's by due process. And you have to insist on it because the people like this guy are going to just say they have the power. And most people have better things to do in their life, or they think, and they're going to give it over. He's also asking private corporations to cut their own emissions by 25%, insisting New Yorkers' wasteful eating habits cannot continue without imperiling the planet. Now, again, a conflation. Maybe you shouldn't waste so much. Maybe we need to look at what's legitimate waste and what is just waste. Maybe we should be watching how we do that. But it has nothing to do with imperiling the planet. That's just an add-on. There's no proof that you're throwing out the half a bagel you should have eaten. Maybe you should only take what you want, what you can eat. You know, that used to be an old thing I was told. You just only put on your plate what you're going to eat. Maybe we should do that better. But it doesn't imperil the planet. In fact, if you understand it, it actually would be put, if it's put improperly managed, and this is the thing about, when they have you separate your stuff out, really a pain, but if you going to kind of go that way, and you have a nice, efficient system that doesn't burden a lot of people, and you're going to use this food waste, you can actually make compost. Well, who would want to make compost, though, when you have the pesticides in the system? See, so you have another problem. However, just looking at this, you would make compost, you can make more green plants, and all this carbon that's going in the atmosphere would actually feed those plants. And when you look at that carbon loading, we're actually at a low spot in a way, not the lowest, we're just that we could go better. A lot better, and as we have been, there has been, over 10 years, it's kind of been increasing a bit. We saw those numbers years ago. I was talking about them. We're finding that the planet is greening up. So he's essentially advocating for your death, and he wants to starve you to death in order to do that as well. We'll stop right here, because I don't want to get focused on discuss all this more than, this is all the continuation of the perception management to get a so-called leader in the way, put them in positions and start talking this nonsense. People, I'm sure no New Yorkers have a good forearm for this, but the point is that this becomes policy, and it becomes what you end up having to do, and you grumble about it, but you end up doing it. my other observation on this, this guy must be, this is evidence when he's doing this. We're going to have this conversation nobody's ready for, and we're going to cause you to not eat, to starve you to death, is evidence of jab harm. This guy is seriously jab harmed, and it's also evidence that he may have an organism in him that wants more harm to come. He's got an organism that wants to weaken people so that that organism can translate itself to spread to other people whose health systems or health immunity systems are deniedly based. And so this is seems to me a jab harm in the idea of it, and it's also possibly one of those organisms, those parasitic organisms looking to spread itself on people that become sick because they're not eating. And then they are only told to eat a non-meat diet. And I guess you can go that way. I attempted to do it myself. I told you I won't go too much further. It didn't really work out for me. And I've all these years been doing research. There's certain things that meat does have you can't get from plants. And so don't know where that goes here, there, there. I do know I could not survive. I got emaciated no matter how well I eat. No matter how much protein I packed away, no matter how many vitamins I looked to find in alternatives in vegetation. Over a year, it just really wasn't working for me. So not only do they want to eat less, they want to eat less of something, some meat, that you may not necessarily be able to survive without. Some of you might. I don't know. I'm not talking for everybody. But this is the problem of a leader, so-called, putting on their property what they're going to do. You see that problem, and then you believe that you're part of that property that has the obligation to listen to the owner of the property, the manager of that property for the time. And yet, okay, so let's look at some of the nature about this and moving more things, interesting things that you can find, what might actually go on. We're talking this carbon footprint nonsense. This is all based in this global warming nonsense and in climate change. I guess you can tell I'm not an adherent to it all. And I've showed you years and years worth of information that shows that why this isn't what could not be. But we see a little evidence here. And relative to the technology and tried to advance all this big data transfer and stuff in this little story here, how Starlink satellites were affected. NASA reveals what made an entire Starlink satellite fleet go down. And in the middle of this story, you see how they were affected, how they experienced the effect of space weather. Well, space weather, I'm surprised, hasn't been denied by the global warming crowd. Space weather has to do with the sun, which is not even noticed. It's not defined as existing. I'm surprised this story has not felt the heat. One of the side effects of space weather, this is the emanations from the sun. This is the particle ejectments. This is all this radiation that comes off of this thing that's not defined in anthropomorphic global warming. It does not. The sun does not exist as part of the models or equation. You have to really understand what they've done here to cause many people to agree and believe in this. Now, one of the side effects of space weather that can affect satellites is the warming in a region called the thermosphere. One of the things that affects this, that increase the density of the upper atmosphere over a short amount of time and caused it to swell up. A denser atmosphere causes a phenomenon called atmospheric drag. Essentially, the thicker atmosphere slows down everything moving through it. It also heats things up. Greta, there's a sun. Greta, it can heat things up. It can cause satellites to slow down in something called a thermosphere. Greta, there's a reality out there that's being denied. Talk about deniers. And remember, we say, you hear that we need to learn more. We need to understand better. Then I find this story. And I need to ask you, because this has been stuck in my craw for a while. Yeah, I'm a little bit of a crawdad here. Is the gaseous sun model on the ropes, I'm asking? With this next story, Greta, you don't identify the sun as available there. It causes it causes the atmosphere to heat up. Do you think that's not a contribution? We have a question of whether or not we're dealing with a gaseous model of the sun, which we've been told all our lives exists. And there's only one guy on the internet, well, there's two guys, a Sky Scholar, that's ever talked about this. And he has a theory as to why. And it speaks to this. And I've never understood this gaseous model. So now that we're on, that Greta has to look at the fact that there's a sun and it heats things up, then maybe we need to look at, do we understand the sun at all? Now that we're going to look, oh, there's something out there, Greta. And we see this little interesting story. Remember, we're talking about someone who wants to have you starve to death because your carbon footprint's too big because you caused global warming. Someone who so jab harm they don't recognize the sun above them. It might be a contributor, just might, just maybe it's a contributing factor. Then we find out, do we even know about the sun? Scientists discover mechanism that may help locate habitable planets. Okay, cool. Well, I'm going to cut right to the chase. I don't have too much time here to dwell on this, but starting out, a team of astronomers led by Anna Shapiro from the Max Planck Institute of Solar System Research in Germany has conducted a study to determine the best type of stars to look for when searching for habitable planets. We've been told the sun, our sun, is a gaseous. Listen to this. Overall, the study highlights the importance of understanding the relationship between the star's metallicity and the potential habitability of its planets. Findings could be important implications for future missions searching for signs of life beyond our solar system. It's anticipated the Webb telescope may in fact aid in such a determination. Metallicity, folks, not gas. And guess what Professor Robitaille talks about at SkyScholar? The sun is actually constructed of hydrogen metal. And guess what? Its optical response is just like carbon, because it's in a lattice, just like carbon would be in a lattice here on Earth. First time I've ever seen talking about metallicity. I'm probably sure they're talking about very little amount. The point is, it's not a gaseous sun. It's not the only thing in the system. And yet, it's been denied all this time by those that would call me a denier, that global warming is caused by you and me eating what cows are now condemned over. The very vegetables that they're pushing, opposed to the cattle that are creating the methane. That's a greenhouse gas. So if you see the nonsense. Metallicity in the sun, very fascinating to me. Very cool, because that means that we don't really know what the sun's about even if we got there. But we have really no clue what this, really the solar system and planets is all about. It's still a neat adventure. And so we have the Webb telescope looking out instead of maybe looking in. Now we do have another satellite that is at the sun now. It's very cool. But looking right at it, very high technology stuff. I don't remember the name of it. Excuse me, because it's an interesting thing. But we don't know what we're looking at. We got these suggestions of what's going on. But can you understand that all science has been pushing a gaseous model of the sun forever, for as long as I've known? And maybe it's not. Maybe there's a solid chemistry to it as well. And it's not like these elements are not known. They see them in the spectrographs. And Dr. Robitaille will tell us. He's actually a chemist. He looks at it from that side as well, which intrigues me, because that's one of my youthful endeavors was in chemistry. I just somehow had a knack for it. I was doing graduate college level stuff just because I guess I was enjoying it in high school. And so this is not that I condemn an actual science. I condemn those that are trying to kill you off who don't have a clue and now maybe jab harmed and maybe actually possessed by an organism wanting to transfer itself to some new body, making you weak and emaciated. All under the rule of austerity, isn't it? Sharing the obligation of being susceptible to this perception management. Then I noticed this in greenhouse gases and the anomaly, not just the space anomaly that they had to destroy this thing on or that caused this, but the anomaly of the problem relative to those that would promote green and not really actually practice it. SpaceX rocket fuel creates stunning blue spiral in Alaska's Northern Lights. And I hope some of you saw that. Those Northern Lights a half a week ago, stunning. Overhead where I was is barely there, but I was able to capture it. So, very first time I could do it. Fascinating. In this case, the SpaceX sent a rocket up, and its spiral of how it goes out into space and the ejectment of its fuel, it did a blue coil in the green, you'll see the picture, I guess, eventually, in the green aurora. Very cool. Nice looking stuff. Light blue galaxy spiral appeared amid the aurora borealis in the Alaska sky earlier on Saturday, catching the attention of Northern Lights enthusiasts. Such spirals occur when fuel jettisoned at high altitudes turns into ice in sunlight. And they go on and talk about all this cool stuff and what it looks like. But I want to go back to that that fuel dumping. What kind of fuel? Well, let's go look. You find out that there's only two, apparently, that SpaceX uses. One is methane. And the other, I'm talking about the hydrocarbon, because that's what gets you into space. It won't do it by electricity. Or the other side was kerosene. And I think this rocket had kerosene. So what we're watching in that beautiful blue spiral is a bunch of frozen kerosene in the sky for all you organic growers. And if it wasn't, it would have been methane in the sky, a greenhouse gas, for all that Tesla wants to make electric vehicle cars for, promoting green. Can't be a consistency that makes any sense or that we should subsidize or pay much attention to necessarily unless those things actually give us something better than anything else, which I don't think that they do. And I'm not against electric cars. They have their place, and that's the problem. They don't go everywhere, and we're finding that out quick. But here we have all those satellites that got taken out because Tesla kind of gambled on that space weather that they just ignored, thumbed their nose at. Just like the launch pad they just did, they didn't put the water. Well, we're going to blow up the launch pad for 6 miles away. They got chunks of concrete. Amazing amount of power. Fascinating technology getting that rocket up. And then they destroy that one. Where'd all that methane? I think that's the methane rocket. Where'd all that methane go, folks? Into the greenhouse? Yeah, no, it's all nonsense. You don't care. They don't care. It's about what are they after? And people want to get a rocket in the sky, and so he's got a license to go pollute your environment. The EPA was involved with all that. Forest Service didn't like the chunks of rock on that. Their state land that they have a license to manage, but at any rate, who cares? That'll be worked out next time. So, kerosene in the environment, methane in the environment. We don't care. Greta, why don't we look at the sun? Maybe there's some heaters going on there. So, we have another story. It's kind of interesting. Ancient Earth may have... I'm talking all this because New York City residents are going to be starved to death, folks, is why I'm talking about this. And we put up with it. And yet there's all this other real science stuff that we don't know is going on that's out there. We think we have a theory. Okay, good. Let's go look at it. But don't make policy and starve people out based on some stupidity that you think is important. Let's not do that. Like the Comey swindle. Just like that. Ancient Earth may have been quite slushy, not a ball of ice, study shows. But to me, either status, I don't really, it's cool, I don't know, it doesn't matter to me today, does it? But, consider this, the habitable planet we now populate, Earth, boasts a tumultuous 4.5 billion year history, they tell us, according to the so-called snowball Earth theory. Between 700 million and 600 million years ago, ice encased the entire planet. Okay, let's just go with it. Without man, an anthropomorphic global warming, how did it heat up, folks? How did it get warmer? And what might be driving this beyond jab harm and just insanity running the world anymore? We find in America, and this may be extending over why Greta comes up with her fantastic things, that she had to be given an honorary doctorate at a university. This works. Well, she's an expert now, isn't she? American IQ scores have rapidly dropped, proving the reverse Flynn effect. Okay, the Flynn effect is interesting. The reversing of it is simple. I'm more interested, though. What do you mean IQs are dropped? They actually explain that leading up to the 90s, IQ scores were consistently going up, but in recent years, the trend seems to have flipped. The reasons are both increase and the decline are still very much up for debate. Well, they don't know. Maybe it's our food. Maybe it's our vaccine. Maybe it's a lot of stuff. Maybe it's pushing people into stupidity that global warming and carbon is a problem. Maybe it's what we do to promote the woke agenda, which is really sustainable development, and the ambassadors of that come out of the university system. But this is a serious identifier for American intelligence. I think it's probably global. Greta, we have a problem, honey. We may have to work something out. American IQ scores are trending in a downward direction. In fact, they have been falling for a decade. They point out the test results for the cognitive domain were going down. Remember, that's what the military uses as their domain of dominance in all this. And they point out that two factors in these tests are dropping, while one, the spatial test, is increasing. And that little anomaly causes them to be all enthralled and want to keep looking. It's not something so straightforward. Point is, apparently, there's certain types of intelligence, and I'm not a proponent of IQ scores. When I found out, I figured out if I thought about who might be the one who created, what was the mind that created the test, if I anticipated what they were looking for, I could, early on, when the internet had these IQ tests, and they still do, I just stopped taking it because I realized they're a data gathering thing. Maybe how they got their evidence here. That you could adjust the outcome of the number, and I could swing it. I couldn't get it below 80 though. I couldn't get really dumb, but for some reason I tried to be really dumb. I tried to answer questions I knew should be answered wrong, and I'd still, which I don't know if that's a bias in the test. The point is that you could take these tests, and I could skew, if I could anticipate who the questioner was, because there's a theory about depending on who the questioner is and who you ask the questions and their experience in the world, and this becomes the so-called race question as well, that you would necessarily shift the level of the IQ. And so I kind of played the other side. I said, well, if I just played like I was stupid relative to a subject matter, if I can figure out what area they were speaking to, who they were thinking they were testing, I would speak in those areas or not, and I found I could adjust an IQ score for myself. And that to me, okay, those are useless. Why waste time on them? It doesn't matter. A lot of times we can be pretty intelligent and not really use it all anyway, and cause, like we see Kobe swindle, we agree to all this stuff. Because why? Our perception has been met. All that intelligence is used against us, and we don't know that. Now, our school system, we can see, like Common Core, being dropped down, and mothers and fathers don't understand the consequence. They're preyed upon because they do have to both, now mothers and fathers typically have to go live, work in that situation. Some are very few are free to do otherwise, it seems. And then we have a little bit of, so now we have a problem when we bring people into the system and they're taking tests, but we find out in India, India's population is on track to exceed China's. Think about this. Exceed China's, India's population, but a report says its workforce is weighed down by thousands of people with worthless college degrees. And this comes up, there's a couple problems with an IQ score. If you're testing for people that should have some of this knowledge, they're going to test poorly if they've never had that experience. It's kind of like the test when I went into a chemistry test, a statewide chemistry test, and the instructor purposely did not tell us what the questions were, and every other school got those questions. He wanted to see how good we were, because we were, I had another friend of mine, and we were pretty good at chemistry, pretty good at science. And he was intrigued by how well we would do. And so he didn't tell us the answers. And so we went to the test, we tested unprepared and got him literally cold. Any other team already had, they could study what the questions would be and the subject matter. This is kind of like what an IQ test is. If you don't know about the subject matter or not being spoken to, you can test fairly poorly on it. If you don't think that way, you can test fairly poorly on it. Well, we're finding in a nation of the greatest population should be the biggest pool of notice, but thousands of people have worthless college degrees. Sounded like our university system in America, relative to actual knowledge versus agenda. And so that caused me to think of some more things. Why is maybe IQ maybe dropping? It's not necessarily the IQ, it's the testing what you expect. When India went and said, listen, we need a certain population sectors to be fortified with knowledge, it wasn't there. And all these degrees didn't mean much. And that's why I'm hopeful in a way that people are seeing that you spend a lot of money and get nothing from let's say, a United States university. And it's not going to really serve you, so why go into that debt? I'm not saying that's right for everyone. What I'm saying is that we really have to rethink our world anymore. There's a parallel system, and a lot of it's the one that we're being led into is a system of plunder and exploitation. And I talk about that all the time in the broadcast, and how I'm hoping to give people the knowledge to see and where to go check to make sure for themselves objectively where that plunder and exploitation system is, and to be able to avoid it in an objective way so that you're not considered to be a criminal, essentially, when you get into this new world order type stuff. But this then brought up the story about someone I had never understood how she got up into the, in New Zealand, how she got up into this politics. And then that always has, and then looking at this, a little story here, just Jacinda Ardern accepts fellowship at Harvard University. She just resigned her post at the prime minister, I think it is, of New Zealand. And boy, she went from an attractive woman, I mean, she looked healthy and all, to looking pretty hideous at the end while she was destroying people in New Zealand through this Kobe swindle. Well, some months later now, she's accepted an invitation to Harvard. And I said, well, who is this lady? She's like, born in 1980? What could she possibly know in the world? Where has she been? The former New Zealand Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern, said on Wednesday that she is taking up 3 fellowships at Harvard University later in 2023. 3! So I went quick like a bunny. Remember that worthless degrees in the university system producing worthless things. I went to her wiki just to see. She was, again, born in 1980. But it moved, go down. You see Ardern moved to London, England in 2006, where she became the senior policy advisor in an 80-person policy unit of the United Kingdom Cabinet Office under Prime Minister Tony Blair. She did not meet Blair in person while in London, but later at an event in New Zealand in 2011, she questioned him about a 2003 invasion of Iraq. Ardern was also seconded to the United Kingdom Home Office to help with review of policing in England and Wales. Now, she's only, 20-something here, 30, when she gets to a senior position? And then you find out, relative to Blair, how does she, first of all, get right to that place, right there, and get put in the position? These are people under stars I've never seen in my life. I've never born under a star that was this bright and this shiny and this lucky and all this other stuff. Never. I've never experienced any of this kind of stuff. Ushered right into a top office, still within her 30s at least. Where does she get all this experience? She is also put in her education is in a master class in communication. That's your perception management. She becomes the prime minister relative to New Zealand. And she's been putting in all this in when she's had connection to Blair and, in my mind, destroyed New Zealand, even though Kim.com don't think about it that way. Well, he's the one that got one of the jabs, too. And so he wasn't forward-thinking on that, even though I admire a bit of what he does. These people that want to talk about what they know, they don't really know much in application. And we got to be careful of the celebritudes out there relative to these things. Looking at the news and putting it together and packaging it so that you think, you look like you know what you're talking about. It is looking backward now to say, well, how does she get to, what is her education? And you see, she is essentially, before she got into this, put into the Blair cabinet, if you will, government at that time. She was just a fish fry woman in a restaurant, fish and chips or something. This is what she's done. Yeah, she had a little bit of college education. And yes, she was the prime minister, but you look at how she destroyed and what policies she used to destroy New Zealand. And I want to recall the connection to Blair, how she got right there, young, got into his office, been senior policy advisor. What was her experience? And yet you see that at the time she's questioning Blair and a part of what he's doing. I want to remind you that Blair knew Iraq bombing was illegal, but ordered it anyway, a story I just talked about. This is what's going to Harvard. This is the concepting that's happening to Harvard, the influence that Blair has had on Jacinda Ardern that's now going to be in Harvard, which is no different than what they're already doing to promote this global agenda. Remember, Tony Blair also said he praised Estonia for its digital ID system where babies are given a digital ID at birth. Jacinda Ardern apparently has now 3 fellowships at Harvard that she's accepted. That's where India's looking at, what are these worthless degrees about? You're going to be telling those Harvard students all about how she destroyed New Zealand underneath the view and the influence of Tony Blair, a known globalist. Is coming out of Harvard. Is your university system. Which caught my eye when I saw India is now questioning, what are these worthless degrees for? is the university system, at least in the United States, I think it's global. And I just, to me, I don't understand how people don't notice this stuff. And these are the influences that are coming down the pipe. Now, she's definitely young enough to gain influence in Harvard, to be a look-to policymaker, if nothing else, which is in a system, a university system, that also produces ambassadors to promote the very thing that this gentleman in New York, if I can call him a gentleman, jab-harmed as he might be, promotes this agenda that does not look at the reality of life, does not look at the reality of what's created, what's out there, and focuses themselves in on not what they do, but what everybody else does that they think is a harm and that they have some outstanding ability to solve for themselves in what they promote to be a democracy, what people say is a democracy. And so, again, I don't know what more to say about what people have allowed relative to watching their whole systems destroyed, their education system, IQs going down. Do you start to see maybe there's a reason? As I tell you, see, that date went to, the IQs come down, started in the 90s. The rise was to the 90s, and then it started to fall off. Well, in 85, remember, I'm talking about the guru explaining what the sustainable development stockholder thing is all about, and that system is coming into the university. That was a professor. And they're no longer apparently teaching and giving experience to the world. They're giving experience to how to be an ambassador for the future they want. I can clearly see that would be an IQ test failure where they're not experienced in the things that the writer would want to do. And I suspect as they see that story, they'll start adjusting IQ tests so those people coming out of college will be able to pass those, and most normal people, because the schools are now funneling the young into this idea too. They will be able to pass those tests because that'll be their experience. Not necessarily their intelligence, it's showing their experience and their attention span in a way. So these people that are supposed to be educated, lower IQ folks, they keep coming around and we keep watching them as we see this story pop up, and it lays into us in our economic woes that we see being foisted on us, and then also the drag that Ukraine is. U.S. Fed chair predicts recession in call with fake Zelensky. Jerome Powell, the head of U.S. Central Bank, was pranked by the notorious Russians Vovan and Lexus. And he was Jerome Powell went through and talked with what he thought was Zelensky about his nation. He makes a couple of comments and he makes a couple of admissions. And he says he essentially admits that they have their finger on the tiller to cause and be the cause of your lack of employment in the future, because they have to cool off the economy. What we need is a period of slower growth so that the economy can cool off, so the labor market can cool off, so that wages can cool off. That's how inflation comes down, the central banker continued. It can be painful, but we don't know of any painless way for inflation to come down. As I told you, when this inflation numbers, they started to raise the inflation rate, they were coming after your jobs. He just admits to that. So brilliant behind the woodshed, I guess. But see, this is the thing. You don't just common sense what they're doing. It's a plan. It's a setup. It's to be set up in 2030. They're taking you out. They actually might do it by 2025. They are going to put you in a world of hurt. They're putting you in a place where you have to go to the food bank to get their food, if you're lucky. But this was an interesting prank. It shows the IQ level of this guy. Fed came out and to denounce everything. Oh, there was nothing private given, no private information given out. He didn't do anything wrong. The point is, you hear him say this guy, the single guy in the world, affects your job, affects your wages, will affect your future. And seemingly, all the representatives think that's how this place should be run, this United States being democratized as it is. And there's so much more to be said. I can't cover it all relative to this. But remember, this is the Fed. This is where they are attempting to get your identification relative to the Fed coin. Implementing Fed now is the wholesale international view, which I think will be turned and modified for the internal domestic those currency systems will likely not cross paths as you are cooled off. They'll tell you to cool off. Again, programmable currency is all written right into this discussion I've been having for weeks and weeks now because I can't seem to get away from it. I see it so important. It's going to affect so many people in a way that blindsides them seemingly like COVID did, even though I was saying, commenting about it. I'm asking us to start to be ready to develop that system. Do not engage with these folks. They do not mean you well. They do not mean the nation well. Where they have to go is to identity. I get this story here talking about your representatives, so-called your senators, introduce a bill to create digital identity for all Americans. U.S. Senators Kirsten Sinema, an independent of Arizona, and Cynthia Lummis, Republican of Wyoming, have introduced Senate Bill 884, also known as the Improving Digital Identity Act of 2023. The bill was introduced March 21st. Again, this is a bill, if you have a say to talk to your senators, you've got to figure out the objective reasons why it's no good. You go, they say this bill, the lack of an easy, affordable, reliable, secure way for organizations, businesses, and government agencies to identify whether an individual is who they claim to be online creates an attack vector that is widely exploited by adversaries in cyberspace and precludes many high-value transactions from being available online. We just offer it. It's all about those transactions, isn't it? It's all about promoting the Congress and making it easy for you to do it and they and not have a complaint about it. The point is you're not looking at you. The only way they're looking at you is an identity that becomes a commerce entity. Goes on to say incidents of identity theft and identity fraud continue to rise in the United States, where more than 293 million people were impacted by data breaches in 2021. They can never stop those data breaches, as far as I can tell, whether it's software or whether that's hardware or whether that's policy or whether that's just someone asleep at their switch in an IT office. But this is where we're seeing. I told you it was coming along. The Senate is now coming against you underneath the stalking horse that they're going to keep you secure. And listen to how many people are already engaged in that. It is not a good thing. So if you don't have a digital identity, it can't be stolen, I guess is my answer to that right off the bat. But in the meantime, they're going to have a digital ID for everyone. No one escapes. To get on the internet, you will have to be able to have an identity if we haven't worked out a parallel system that we call at this point the deep web. It's going to have to be maybe web 3, web 4, and be able to understand that. And for the most part, I'm not so sure we are as a people ability to keep up with that. It's like the same thing. Well, how do you keep up with a sick baby and have your rights? You're so focused on that imperative. You're so focused on keeping away from the attachments that this fed idiot actually has control of your life. That's what they're controlling. He says they're going to control your work. It controls everything. This identity is required for that token citizenship. And we watch these idiots imposing this upon us, not them, where we see, as I told you, watch the sovereigns in the world, the nations that are free, have freed and worked hard to be free. Russia understands Western sanctions aren't temporary. And I wanted you to understand that. You understand these sanctions when you get into a token citizenship are not temporary. I've read the documents that show you that it's permanent and you likely cannot escape. As many of you know, if you've been involved with the government, they'll commit a fraud about who you are and they don't care. They just run with that. That's good enough. Fraud is good enough. The restrictions are meant to prevent the country from choosing its own path. Understand that objection. Going to a token citizenship, going to an ID, eliminates your ability to choose your own path because it's irreversible. And Russia, I want to point out here, Russia knows these sanctions are not temporary. This is not a temporary thing that was imposed upon them while they're not being good. Well, if they became good, it would not be lifted. Why? Because the United States government and its monetary system, its fiscal systems, are a brute, a plundering system. It's our way or the highway. We heard that. I reported about that with the Pentagon making its new assessment on how it was going to proceed in the world. And that brought up some of the nuclear stuff, which becomes very much. But so what's the parallel path? And who's doing it? I talked about it last week. Gold leading revolt against dollar. Central banks are buying the commodity as a hedge against possible sanctions, a market expert has suggested. Russia knows it's not temporary. The central banks know where they're going. They're going to need this commodity if they're going to talk internationally. central banks are the sovereigns. I told you the news, the notice to us was last week. They're buying the gold. My question to you is that if they're buying the gold at record rates, why is the price of gold hovering at 2,000 an ounce? Is that the fix is in. Right? The gold fix. The fix is in. It's all a controlled system. It's not actually by market demand. That's what paper gold's about. It kind of floods the system with false gold. You run paper around claiming that it's got something to back it up. It's like toxic debt. And there's a London gold group that bankers, gold hoarders, if you will, marketers, that keep that price. It's not on an open market. The fix is in. I've talked about this for years. But who's buying? Some nations, but central banks more importantly. Why isn't the price also going up on the demand? Record amounts here. What are they doing? Well, it's not going to be for you, and it's not going to be put in your hand, so that token citizenship means something else. It's programmable. It's not gold. It has no intrinsic value. It's not going to be a measure of value. It's not going to be the in-hand value. And in the meantime, all this, with this, and I've told you the industry is in the coin, the digital token industry is in a real bad hurt when they didn't answer to the SEC and the commerce departments. SEC considers reopening exchange definition proposal. And I brought this up because they need, the government as it moves this thing along, needs to square this away. And this is what I was telling you about keeping tabs on you when you have your own private coin and what these companies called exchanges or when they perform like an exchange is defined are. The SEC has a rule. They have to redefine the word exchange. I'm bringing this up for those of you that are interested and know this subject matter well more than I would and know the objective problems. I'm going to give you another link that shows you how that might work, how you might start out. If you want to be able to reconfine this SEC extension out to stop going after, try to make a differentiation for private ways to move the digital currencies around in a private way, maybe you need to jump in on this because now this is a comment period, as I've talked to you before, that you can enter into and enter a comment, which you can throw your objections in, but consider carefully what the objections might be so that you don't build your own trap in again and bring this thing on you. But you have an opportunity here to change that with the SEC and actually make objections and put yourself on a list, if you will, by making that objection. If you feel really important about making a separate and private way to exchange digital tokens, which I believe have a purpose, not as currency necessarily that way, and not as a token citizenship, but actually a value transferring medium privately without the knowledge of the government, then you may be able to enter objections and enter that the SEC may not have authority at all as one of them. To challenge their jurisdiction, but understand the subject matter very well. And you may get some heads up because one of the SEC commissioners, Hester Pierce, says proposed Exchange Act changes threaten free speech. I give you a link here if you're interested. Incorporate maybe if you feel that it needs to be revoiced as a comment. Look and see whether she's adequate enough or whether it can go further. She gives you an observation of there may be some real defects. Why this comment period may have been open because the industry came back and said it's not actually right. You can now enter in. Those of you that feel passionate about this, notwithstanding my sense of it or lack of ability to understand some of it as well, or there's just too many things to do, you are focused on it. You're best positioned to go ahead and comment. And if it comes out and they do something violative and it is a free speech problem, there's more arguments too, that are fundamental rights that are protected that this negates. You have the right to be anonymous in your acquisition of information. You have the right to be anonymous in your lawful transaction, and you have the right to be free of the of living and exchanging in the presumption of innocence come to mind off the bat. You have the right to a freedom of contract, which could be you don't want to freedom of association. You don't associate with the government that in your lawful dealings. I don't know where you would go with that for you, but these things come to my mind as a part of a comment that the lead, this Hester Pierce may be giving you the lead to be able to help you make a comment. Don't sit back idly. Like I said, I'm not so sold on these digital currencies unless it was a private medium that I can do anonymously, but they're not. And if you can set up and do that for yourself and then I can see, you know, the work it pushed through, it may take a few years. You commit yourself to it. you may be the one that actually makes a place where these, they may have an exchange, but there's also a parallel path that they can't regulate, and it's all been determined why, and it's off limits. As we see more low IQ things going on, and the persuasion of the government to not limit our servitudes underneath these fiscal irresponsibilities, I would call them, the House passes the McCarthy debt ceiling proposal. As I talked about it last week, this is part and parcel with keeping the Fed in a position of authority to be able to control your life, control your labor, control the wage of your labor, control a lot of other things as they move this thing along and they get you into a place. My thought is they get you, part of it is they get you into a place where you have to participate. And then they got you. And it was because you didn't really start rolling up your sleeve early enough, and there's been plenty of time. But the thing that the Republican had advanced was to raise the debt ceiling. Not solve the problem. No, we're going to raise it. And last week they said, you know, we were told, oh, they're going to put lower expending. On a budget line item thing that you find out is nothing more than that. Just a budget line item relative to the overall financial structure of the United States. But they're going to raise that debt ceiling and cut spending, which we didn't see any cut spending to the military. And so we really have a problem coming down. The Republicans are helping. They want to see this thing go on with the Ukraine, and that's really causing some serious trouble. While we also hear this is moving from the House, it'll move up into the Senate, and it's dead on arrival there, but politics will be politics. I don't know that they want to let this Yellen to put her power onto this thing, but we have the IQ of Jerome Powell saying, be duped by some Russian podcasters, I suppose, and tell them, like they're talking to Zelensky, that he can't help them politically. They can only so much they can do as the Fed. Again, so they support that war, that deplorable thing over there. But they're intending to defeat the United States people. We're going to go two more sections. We're going to beat them down some more in their wages and their labor, and we're going to keep beating them down some more, as I told you that they would. Where we have Zelensky's right-hand man contradicting a U.S. general, Kyiv has not received 98% of the vehicles it needs for its planned offensive. That's big, great spring offensive they talked about. Not happening at this point, but I bring this up after I bring up McCarthy's budget proposal. We're going to break the debt ceiling again, but supposedly limit cut costs, if you will, cut expenditures, but not talk about the military. That he's saying there in Kyiv that they have not received 98% of the vehicles it needs. What I read into that means, sounds like there's a black marketeering going on. And they just found out, all the money and stuff that budget that McCarthy wants to raise the debt ceiling for to promote in Ukraine, 98% of the vehicles that went there got diverted through a black market, which we've heard is going on. And this guy says those aren't available. The governments say they sent them. Well, unless there's a big warehouse somewhere at the end of a movie showing that they all exist there, we're, I think, seeing what McCarthy's building into. Republicans aren't here to stop anything. They actually support this nonsense. And what is being sent over was also acknowledged, and the United States supports it. And the money they say that's going over there and the material that's not showing up for the Ukraine to actually do the offensive they need, even if we supported the Ukraine. Despite we have no business there, folks. Moscow, West intends to turn Ukraine into a radioactive landfill as part of an all-out escalation. The UK said it will not help clean up its depleted uranium munitions it sent over there. Of all the vehicles it doesn't have, Ukraine has depleted uranium munitions that UK is wiping its hands free, that Russia took issue with, that shows that when they start using that, they want to pollute that ground. And I wonder if this is another, even though BlackRock and Vanguard is all back in the background of this thing making investments, and then I wonder about what they're going to do if this is to pollute that land so Russia can't have it. And the BlackRock and Vanguard group of farmers who make food for you won't care that that land is polluted. Or the thought that crossed my mind as Russia is complaining vociferously here, if nothing else, that they better not. I don't know what they're going to do to stop it because it's already happening, I believe. I think there's reports that it's already going on. What's going on is that they're polluting that land and they intend to. And boy, something came out. I don't know if I have the tab. But one of the Russian political leaders, I think it was the military head there, the civilian military guy, said, I didn't realize it was this bad. He says that the UK has been a perpetual enemy and will always be an enemy of Russia. That is not good sounding mojo there to try to make peace. It's just not going to happen. While UK is known now to supply the elements to pollute the land. And if the West will not get it, it'll be polluted for Russia when it gets it. In other words, the people there will suffer some more. Why are sensitive U.S. nuclear technologies in Ukraine? Was a question, very interesting. Topic here of biological research facilities and an infamous neocon warmonger, Victoria Nuland, ever so euphemistically put it, received a significant amount of attention from the media around the world while the mainstream propaganda machine tried to suppressing it. On the other hand, by far the most overlooked aspect of the Ukraine conflict has been the covert transfer of U.S. nuclear technologies to the neo-Nazi junta. CNN, the famous U.S. neoliberal mouthpiece, was the first major mainstream propaganda outlet that broke the story last week. According to the report, Washington, D.C. has, quote, sensitive nuclear technologies, close quote, in at least one former Ukrainian nuclear power plant. CNN claims that the U.S. has already warned Russia not to touch them, citing a letter of the Department of Energy allegedly sent to Moscow's Rosatom Corporation. CNN supposedly reviewed the letter dated March 17th, in which the director in DOE's Office of Non-Proliferation Policy, Andrea Furkile, told Rosatom that the Zaporizhzhia NPP in Energodar contains U.S.-origin nuclear technical data that is export-controlled by the United States government. Russia's response? Firstly, the idea that Russia is in any way intimidated by a third-rate U.S. bureaucrat who allegedly ordered it to not touch anything is simply absurd. Excuse me, this is the author's interjection, and I have to think it might be Russia's. Second, both the Washington, D.C. and its Kiev puppets are parties to the Treaty on the Non-Proliferation of Nuclear Weapons, which means that the transfer of sensitive nuclear technologies to the neo-Nazi junta is a direct violation of that agreement. Worse yet, the U.S. is now supposedly threatening Russia through a director of its Office of Non-Proliferation Policy, an institution that was supposed to prevent sensitive U.S. nuclear technologies from ever reaching Ukraine. Bringing this up because it does say here we were overwhelmed with the amount of bioweapons labs there. Do not forget the nuclear threat that sat there in the land as well, that Ukraines are trying at some point attacking that one nuclear reactor to try and blow up around it, at least threatening to make a nuclear disaster there. The ongoing West imposition of nuclear threat, no matter if it's weapons or even the destruction of a Chernobyl-style destruction of a nuclear power plant or even in depleted uranium. It appears that they want to create a nuclear disaster there, a soft disaster, if I can call it that. Again, equating the biolab problem over and over, a repeating, regurgitating problem of indigestion in the world relative to the U.S. and nations and where these labs might be, moving in and through this news that we're told, the latest outbreak now, Sudan, I hope you've paid attention here. It is breaking out, war is breaking out lots of places. Biohazard risk in Sudan as warring factions seize a lab. WHO makes that report. Technicians have been denied entry to a facility where samples of diseases are stored, according to an official. I don't think Sudan has nuclear weapons, thank goodness. We have another country coming on. I think Turkey's going to be getting, but for Russia, for power development, nuclear power development. But here we have another biohazard risk in Sudan, and I wanted to know, well, who owns these biolabs? And they're there too, like Ukraine, and the United States is involved. And we have another story, the WHO, Sudan conflict creates high risk of biological hazard at local laboratory. Don't read the stories too much here. You can read those just as a point to go through. that who is involved in that? Who is this? A Russian biolab? Is this the United States? Is it Sudan's? Well, under the color of being a Sudan health lab, it's the CDC is there. It's been there since, apparently, if I read this correctly, 2006. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, established an office of the Sudan, South Sudan, in 2006 to work on HIV prevention through the U.S. President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief. Just like NIH and Fauci there again, folks. CDC partners with the Ministry of Health in Sudan to focus on the national responses of HIV, tuberculosis, diarrheal diseases, and cholera, Ebola preparedness, measles, polio, and COVID-19. That's what they own, folks. Patently, 2003. CDC partnerships, investments helped strengthen disease surveillance capabilities, laboratory systems, data, and health information management systems in the public workforce. You can read more. They talk about global health security. Again, security. Anytime you see security, it's them. They're going to destroy you. In other words, the biolab in the Sudan, run by the West, the United States, and the WHO, and the World Bank, and the Global Fund of some sort, or the Global Citizens, if you will, anything global here is going to be another tap. You'll see in this report that the United States is behind this very thing that is happening in Ukraine. It doesn't change. Then I respond through and show that in a story in another tweet. The attack, the statement that what's happening in Sudan through a tweet, Russia agrees with Sudan on the construction of a naval base. Biden talks Sudan out of the deal. Biden allocates $288 million to Sudan. Victoria Nuland is coming to Sudan a month later. War begins in Sudan. And then I add, and then, and add this ad, this story from Forbes, extremely dangerous risk as fighters in Sudan occupy lab holding measles and other labs, all instigated from the West and the West-supported biolabs in a same scenario as we find in Ukraine. As we can't escape the type of, like we saw earlier, CDC behavioral control. They're everywhere. They want to keep your perception management like they're not there, they're not doing it, and the United States is everywhere threatening seemingly everyone. Now, if you don't comply or die, you know, if you don't comply with the United States, you will die. And it's the total antithesis of the direction that China has gone now and Russia, and that's going to gain, like I said over and over, that's going to gain favor. But where we have these outbreaks, it's not hard to quickly go and find out the United States has their fingers in these biolabs in places where they want to do this genetically refined strains. Essentially, it seems to me to be population management. They'll do it over there to those people. They're doing it to you at home. And if Kobe Swindle wasn't that proof, I really don't know what more to say. That, again, the perception, the behavior control is sufficient for the enemy attacking you to not respond. Your silence is what they're looking for as well. I hope something today I said will help you or organize this stuff in the world, even though it's all over the place. See, it's happening right next to you in your land. We all people will have to step up and figure out how to protect ourselves from these psychopaths in the world and these liars and the so-called leaders the war is on our mind, and we have a duty to ourselves, I suppose, if I can say it this way, to protect ourselves and our little ones, our future too, the one we want, not the one that they say that we want. I'll be with you next week. Tech Tips for Nature Radio.
Well, that's another lesson. I hope with today's information you can take it to those that misbehave. From behind the woodshed, leaving his mark on the beast, this is Hal Anthony. Till next time, journey with purpose.
A can of whoop ass feels like.
Son, you just opened a whole case of whoop ass.